John McClane. Jake Coach's Corner.
You're listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plymer.
For someone to explain.
Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
Okay, welcome to episode number 15 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plymer, and joining me today is Richard Cheatham. Richard is a senior fellow in sports coaching at the University of Winchester, where he has worked since 2005, following 3 years of teaching and coaching in New Zealand. He's developed a strong reputation on creative thinking and innovation with coach education and development, and has presented to Rugby Canada, British Cycling, Cycling Ireland, England Handball, and England Cricket. His research focus centres on a more holistic approach to coaching, with time spent since 2013 at Saracens RFC with the Academy program, as well as looking into the challenges of captaincy in the English Premiership. Richard is an experienced rugby union coach educator for London South Region and Hampshire RFU, as well as a tutor for Sports Coach UK on the Talent Foundation series. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show, Richard, so welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, so quite an in-depth backstory there, but anything I missed out, or can you go over that backstory in a bit more detail for us?
Yes, sometimes it's hard to summarize that, not because of anything other than every little piece of the jigsaw has led to something else. So I stopped playing in 99, and the natural thing was to go into coaching. I wanted to stay with the club that I was at, and I just finished a postgraduate master's at university and wanted to add that knowledge to my sort of coaching and see where I go. But no, very much what you've read out is a summation of sort of 10, 15 years of coaching at all levels, and obviously in New Zealand and in England with different organisations. So it's a lot of knowledge accumulation.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, I'm pretty interested in the work you did with Saracens. You did some stuff on coach education for creativity in coaching, which is pretty much what we're going to look at today in today's podcast. So you also did some research projects on captaincy and also coaching preferences and the development of resilience and grit. Sorry, you able to go into that in a bit more detail?
Yeah, sure. So I was in contact with Saracens about 3 years ago, and I sort of wanted to share this creativity workshop that I had. It was just quite a simple workshop. You get coaches around you. Short, half an hour, 45 minutes, get coaches to think differently about their coaching practice. There's coaching fatigue and there's player fatigue and there's mid-season slumps where coaches are continually looking at ways of engaging players throughout a long season, and particularly if you're having that tough time and not doing so well, but if you're at the top end, it's also keeping one step ahead of the opposition.
Yeah.
And so from that, I then went back to them and I said, you know, the coaches, there's no coincidence why Saracens are where they are. They're very keen on bringing people in, looking at knowledge from right across the spectrum. And so they chose an area that they'd like to be interested in. And I developed a project around coaching preferences. So I asked Academy players what they valued in a coach, what was most important to them.
Yeah.
And interestingly, you know, winning was not really a priority. They didn't want a coach that was about winning.
Yeah.
They wanted a coach that gave them the skills to win. They looked at the strength of the relationship, the knowledge the coach had, what was their knowledge of the game. They looked at how they would transfer that knowledge across in an effective way and show empathy when it looks at the different learning approaches, engaging players with different backgrounds. And then the second time they brought me in, and they were quite keen to look at the players in the academy. At some point you have to decide which ones you're going to keep and which ones, you know, won't make the next step. It's a very difficult time because, you know, players, how do you decide amongst a group of players who look fairly similar. So we just did some work on resilience and looking at how players would be tenacious about challenges. It was a classroom-based exercise, and we looked at some interviews of players who had moved from America and were now living in London, away from their family, and how they dealt with that. So you look at, when we looked at this holistic approach, it was how do players cope with setbacks, challenges, and will those behaviors they exhibit then influence their behaviors on the pitch? So, you know, if you've lost 3 or 4 games in a row, if you've not been selected, or you've been injured, you know, how will those, how will you respond to those different challenges? And by interviewing and talking to players and giving some various challenges, you get an idea of how players will respond.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think when you look at two athletes who have equal inverted commas talent and, you know, the same genetic kind of attributes and things like that, that resilience piece is pretty key. I think we've all seen in our coaching those kids who are like, you know, they could go do anything in this game, but, you know, the wheels fall off at certain times, or they struggle with that accountability piece, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, one of the examples which I always talk about was which like the head of the academy said to me, you know, the player who's been his name has been on the team sheet, the first name on the team sheet since he was 14, and when they interviewed him at the academy, he said, you know, you've never, you know, for the last 4 years, you've been the first name on the team sheet. How would you feel if you were not, you know, not picked? They're curious about that. You know, how will we respond? Mm. And that's what they're looking at is, you know, this is now you're starting your development. You won't play every game. You'll play 20 minutes here, half an hour here, some games, and have some games off. If a player's been used to being picked every time, how will you respond to that new challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so you touched on it a little bit there. More what I want, like, definitely the focus of this episode is creativity in coaching. Why do you think creativity in coaching is important? Why do coaches need to be thinking about this?
I think at all levels, at the kind of introductory level where children come along to your first session, you know, they will make a decision very early on as to what they feel about that sport. And they may go into it with an idea that they've seen rugby on the television, very excited, go along, and the coaching session doesn't match that excitement.
Yeah.
So children will be very selective about what they want to do based upon their first experiences, and those experiences then that can carry on from that. So how can I engage them? What ideas can I use? How can I go through this coaching whereby the children are always challenged, always excited about turning up, always learning? Everything that I do will keep them on their toes. You know, activities changing relatively quickly, but lots of learning. If I have a creative environment, I've got an engaged group. And if I've got an engaged group, then there's a likelihood that they are going to stay with that sport, whichever sport it is, you know, year on year. And the highest level, what's the difference between the team at the top and the team at the bottom? It's not necessarily anything other than, you know, you look about the marginal differences between teams. Very often it's about how you develop players. It's obviously about how you develop players, how you give players freedom, how you constantly challenge yourself as a coach. With the presentation I did at, in Toronto, Rugby Canada, I plucked out a figure of 126, which 42 weeks of the year, 3 warm-ups a week is 126 warm-ups. So those are learning opportunities.
Absolutely.
So being creative is, you know, that's 126 chances for players to learn, develop skills, rather than just go through a process of warming up prior to training or a match.
Yeah, and if you say every warm-up's about 15 minutes, you're looking at, you know, over 30 hours of learning opportunities there. And I think all coaches are guilty. I've definitely done it, where you kind of get there and you pretty much phone in the warm-up. You're not feeling it for that day or for whatever. But then the rest of your session, you're on point. You've got that really well planned. But the warm-up, we're missing opportunities there.
It sets the tone. You know, I absolutely believe it sets the tone for how I'll feel for the rest of the session. And also you can go to the other extreme where players turn up late thinking, well, it's just the warm-up.
Yeah,
exactly. Doesn't matter. And also, you know, again, we talk about young players and setting the tone. You said that you put down a marker. This is what it's about. I always think about a James Bond film. The first 3 minutes of a James Bond film are really exciting. It's the chase. It's the end of one story before the beginning of another. And immediately you kind of, you know, you're switched on. Mm. And kind of I think of that when I do my sessions.
Yeah, I think I was at the Rugby Canada conference that you had talked about, and that's how we met, obviously. But I remember you said something like the first 30 seconds is the most engaged you're going to have that group for your entire session. That's what you're talking about right there, right?
Yeah, so, you know, if the first 20 seconds is when you're the most receptive in a whole, imagine you've got a session for an hour, the 20 seconds is where you're most receptive, and that will be, you'll be alert. The next 3 minutes sets the tone for the session. Mm-hmm. And I always think about the first 20 seconds of a presentation, if it's something I say or something I show somebody, and the next 3 minutes is an activity. Let's get involved early. Let's just do something that gets people involved straight away. And, you know, in a classroom-based session, we did the portraits.
Mm-hmm.
We did the drawing on the head.
Yeah, that was a beauty.
Quite odd. I mean, they're high risk because you're going to wonder who doesn't want to do it, and they don't know me and they don't know one another. But, you know, creativity is about, you know, it's a lot of mistakes, but you keep the ones that have worked, and you work on the ones that were nearly there. So, but that 20 seconds and 3 minutes is not something that I've kind of made up. It is a lot of reading, a lot of observations through how to do presentations, working with young children. I said the story about collecting my daughter from the nursery. You know, how I meet her will set the tone for our relationship for the rest of that evening. You know, so. It's the same with a coaching session.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I've got, in about 45 minutes, I've got to go pick my kids up from daycare. So I'm with you on that one. What are some examples of best practice in this area then with creativity? Like, it's hard with a podcast. A lot of this stuff is visual. But what are some of what you've seen and what you've done that you think, right, that's perfect. That's exactly what we want to be doing.
Okay, so I mean, let's have a look at how I design a session. First of all, it has to be purposeful. Mm-hmm. It may look to a child like it's a game, but I have designed that game to have outcomes in there. It could be things like this decision making. I mentioned it before, and in the presentation, what's the first thing a player does when the referee blows his whistle to start a game? And people say they run, jump, catch. Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing you do is make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so lots of decision making in games, small-sided games. And then I think about how I can progress activities. So one of the games that I really like is Human Noughts and Crosses.
Okay.
Okay. So you build a big grid, like a Noughts and Crosses, 3x3, and you have two teams of six, or you know, you can have teams entering either sides, and you number players off, and they have to make a line. There are a couple of rules to it. You can't go to the easy one. You can't make a line that's right in front of you, three across, because that's dead ease. That's the nearest one. And if two players from opposite teams arrive in a square at the same time, you shout clash. That means they have to move because they can't be on the same square at the same time.
Okay.
And because they move, the other players have to then respond to that.
Yeah, that's great.
And so you have this developing game where people are looking to work cooperatively. They're looking at making a decision. There's tactics. There's speed over the ground. You can bring a ball in. And there's lots of developments from that. So, Human Noughts and Crosses is the basis of a very simple game. It's a quite good warm-up game.
Human tic-tac-toe for our North American listeners.
Okay, that's a language challenge there. Sorry, I'm just trying a whole list of ideas down. And one of them was when I went to the turf program on the Sunday. I can't predict often where the ideas came from, but we were doing a very simple exercise in catching high ball. So I put the scenario in that, you know, Britain at the moment's got an astronaut, so he was throwing the ball down from space. They were having to reach up and catch it before other people came, or they were throwing the ball up to him and he didn't want it and it was coming back down. So you develop the idea of a theme. So space was the theme because that's in the news, and it got players to jump off the ground, catch high ball, and then I progress it from that to the next stage. I've got a list of ideas here. Tug of war is a great way of getting players to look at functional strength.
Yeah.
It can be competitive. You can add little things to it. I've also done something called it's called a skill sandwich. So which has got the meat, the sort of tasty part. That's where a lot of activity takes place. But on the outside, there are skills that players will warm up with and then come into the middle of the sandwich. So you've got activities, three different stages of a session going. Again, these are very difficult to describe on a podcast,
yeah,
I mentioned about gorillas. The pose of a gorilla is very much the stance of a player when you're trying to get that strength for building a scrum, for lifting, for tackling.
Mm-hmm.
We had
a nice exchange on Twitter about some sock wrestling that I did with my academy guys. I got that idea straight off you, and the guys loved it.
Yeah, I saw the video. It's fantastic. When you get a chance to look at it, it's great. You just get two players lined up.
Mm.
They take a shoe off each, and it's basically they have to take one another's sock off. It sounds strange, obviously, when you talk about it, but a bit like the drawing on the head. But when you see it, as you can see from what happened, it's very competitive and very tiring. But functionally, in terms of, conditioning players, very, very good.
Yeah, and if people want to see it, they can go onto my Twitter site. But you listen to the sound in the background, and it sounds like an old Roman battlefield. Like, there's screams and there's pain. There's like lots of fun, and like there was no blood, but the boys loved it. So I'll definitely be pulling that one out again. Yeah. So what then would you say to the coach who says players learn best through repetition? They're either an extremely technical coach who doesn't use a lot of games, or they have their favorite, 12 drills that they roll them out year in, year out at certain periods of time because they know that these drills, in inverted commas, work. What would you say to those coaches who are resisting being risky and taking that risk and being overly creative?
Well, there's a phrase from athletics that says same training, same results.
Mm.
And I always say same coaching, same results. When you look at the development of a child throughout their stages of learning, I use the word robust. And robust means preparing them for when things go wrong. If you are a telling coach through a very linear way, this is how we do it, that's fine. But what happens when things don't work out? That child or that player will look to the coach for guidance because they haven't had that experience of problem solving. So it isn't something you can do overnight, switch overnight from one approach to another. So it's a question of a gradual change. And some coaches understandably are fearful because, you're going to fail. I mean, there's going to be mistakes, things don't work out. But I always remember at a coaching session, one of the players at my club, Ben Basingstoke, said to me, he said, "You just made that up, didn't you?" I said, "Yeah, I did." He said, "It was brilliant." I said, "Oh, thanks very much." And it is a question of being adaptive, but in terms of a learning perspective and a coaching perspective, a rugby field is full of variables. It's chaotic whilst it's organized. And if you don't allow players out of that structure and you teach them in a very prescriptive way, they don't learn to think differently. They learn the way that you have taught them rather than way of they've explored that environment. I've written a phrase down here, which is, create a non-conventional learning environment.
Mm.
Why not have a game that looks different from rugby, but equally they have to solve problems. So what I'd say to that coach is one small change is the step to creativity. Creativity is not doing anything dramatic. It's about a gradual change, adding things, taking things away, moving, there's a step process where you change the space, you add equipment, take equipment away, you change the task or you reduce or add number of people. But it is, as I said before, you've got a group of, of people. You want to engage and keep them on their toes, keep them interested, because there are plenty of distractions at other sports, things that aren't sports, sedentary behavior, you know, sitting in front of a television and being active. So, you know, would you be coached by you? Would you attend one of your sessions?
Yeah, there's so much competition out there, isn't there? One of the things you said in your presentation was how we're dealing with a very distracted audience, and there's a lot of competition for the session that you're just about to run. They can be doing many other things.
Absolutely. There is, you know, 101 different things they could be doing. So, you know, I think that I think there are fewer coaches who are less fearful of doing things differently.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gradual change. It's just stepping away from being what I call linear or traditional.
Okay, what does science say then about the creative approach? Or, you know, we've talked a lot about a games-based approach. We haven't touched on teaching games for understanding a lot, but is that kind of, you're more leaning towards that TGFU rather than a games-based? And if so, what does the science say about, you know, retention of knowledge and skills and motor skills and those kind of things?
Okay, well, it's the research on creativity in sports coaching and playing is quite minimal. So we have to look outside of that to the general approach of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
People are a product of their environment. If you're given an environment where you have freedom of expression, then discovery. When I do the sessions, I have this discover, develop, consolidate. Discovery is, right, here's a ball. Here's a space. Do what you want. Try and work out how the ball bounces. How many times can you catch? You know, how many times can you clap when the ball's in the air before you catch it again? So the creativity link between that is about exploring and getting children to, or adults to, show you different ways of working around the same problem. So in terms of a scientific approach, we're trying to create an environment which is fearless, what I call a safe place to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you'd never say in an art session, right, you've got to, I want you to draw this exactly how I've drawn it, because the whole thing about art is it's a creative, the word creative arts, it's about your expression.
Yeah.
So when I looked at the amount of research into sport and creativity, you know, I couldn't find any other than commentaries, and they were small commentaries. The research that I've done has been very much asking players and coaches how they've reflected upon sessions that they have been a part of, mm-hmm. where they've been given an opportunity to discover and develop new ideas, where I've really given them a catalyst. So I've given them a theme, I've given them some equipment, and said, I want you to develop an activity which is based around this, and off you go. And that's quite risky. You have to kind of nurture the older coach, because they've not had that before.
Mm-hmm.
But your children are a lot more fearless when it comes to that. I had a group of students, and I said, I want the most exciting way to travel from one end of the hall to the other, carrying a ball. And we had various sort of standard ones. And then one child did a one-handed cartwheel down the length of the sports hall with the ball in their spare hand. And it made me realize then, listen, my creative mind would have never thought of that.
Yeah. Well, our creative bodies wouldn't have been able to do it either.
Well, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, children are creative, and as they get older, they lose that little bit of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Different, you know, the environment changes, people can suffocate, and they like curriculum-based learning. It's very structured. So it's actually about allowing people to discover what they're capable of doing, and also allowing them to, you know, when I say the word fail, they will make mistakes, but they will come up with some great solutions.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's great. So for coaches who, you know, want to dip their toe in the water and try it out, how would you advise that they start? You said in your presentation that this process can be messy, which for me, I think that's great, because rugby can be really messy. A lot of the time. How would you advise a coach starting out trying to blend a few of these ideas into their regular coaching?
Okay, so Start very simply with the warm up.
Mm.
Let's have a look at how we can first engage the players. The rest of the session may be looking at the game itself, but how can we look at the warm up? Let's have a look at a theme. What theme can I use? So I use space. Well, the space taught me about the high ball. It's how can I use a high ball? How can I progress that? So the high ball came to the catch and then a pass off the catch. And then that meant a support player came in. And then we put a defender in there. So it's about progressing skills based upon a theme.
Mm-hmm.
Ideas come from the most unlikely of places. So providing people are open-minded, there's a phrase that's been used about, which is, you know, turn off your phone. And turning off your phone means, can you give something your absolute 100% attention? Mm. The sock wrestling, you know, that idea, the gorilla's idea, the human noughts and crosses ideas, of ones that have arrived kind of like when you least expected them. So the first step is to think of an idea. What am I trying to achieve? How can I do that in different ways? What ways are there? Who could I talk to? Why can I look at other sports? If you look at fencing, for example, fencing and boxing are two fantastic sports where you can look at footwork.
Mm.
They've probably got the quickest feet. You know, it may be in all sports, that's a bit of a bold thing to say, but can I look at other sports to learn from them? Can I look at sports like judo for, you know, wrestling, landing, rolling? Mm. When I looked at one of the areas I'm really was sort of pleased with at work was this genius playlist when looking at developing a child's physical literacy.
Okay.
So I wrote down all the ways that I could think of a child would move, stretch, jump high, jump long, sprint, run backwards, run forwards, roll, balance on one leg, a whole variety of different activities. So I wrote a playlist down and I thought, how could I incorporate all of these words into a warm-up? And I'm happy to, if anybody's interested, send this project, which I did, and it's basically called Human Movement Bingo. And when the coaches watched me deliver this session, every time I did one of these activities, a roll, a stretch, a high jump, a run backwards, run forwards, they ticked the box off. And it made them realize that you can actually cover so many fundamental movement skills within a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And I think coaches are very technically driven, very tactically driven, but those skills will come and obviously are essential. But look at the greatest teams in the world, the greatest athletes in the world. They have a phenomenal movement vocabulary. It's no coincidence that the best four teams in the World Cup all exhibited great athletic skills.
Absolutely. Argentina, like, springs to mind, like the backs in that, or even the forwards, like, it's athletically unbelievable.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it really is about, here's an analogy, and I wouldn't, if I was going to a different country where I didn't know many words, I'd have a limited vocabulary. I'd have a few key words probably. But if a player goes into an environment, what vocabulary have you taught him to go into that game with? And that vocabulary, again, is a whole range of fundamental skills. That's why the sock wrestling is such a good idea, because it's functional strength training. You know, let's run backwards a lot. Let's run sideways. Let's hop and let's roll and let's twist. You know, another game which I did with the guys in turf was a Bangkok traffic jam. And if any of you have seen a Bangkok traffic jam, but there's lots of cars, limited space, but not many accidents.
Mm.
So we recreated a human Bangkok traffic jam. Everybody had a ball in hand. It meant they had to keep their heads up because they didn't want to bump into anybody else. And after all, we're trying to encourage players to avoid contact rather than take contact. So we had agility, we had footwork, we had balance. If it did bump into somebody, how did they recover? We put a spin in there, and then you can change the, you know, the Bangkok traffic jam has got a few lorries, a few Ferraris, you might have a policeman in there who's checking people's speeds. You might have some roadworks going on. And, you know, this is, it sounds a bit crazy, but actually it really is taking one snapshot from a TV program about the Bangkok traffic jam and then putting it into rugby context.
That's awesome. I'm doing that on Monday night at my academy.
Well, and then the other thing, well, I'm really pleased. I'd love to know how it goes. And then this is the challenge. This is the thing that will really engage the participants, adults and children. Say, give me an idea. What are you going to change? And then somebody will say, well, let's get a few, I don't know, Ferraris, and let's get some motorbikes, and you know, let's get, I don't know, a gorilla that's escaped from the zoo to run through the traffic. They'll come up with some ideas that really take it to the next level.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'll roll that out, and I'll take a couple of videos and send it over via Twitter. And
I look forward to that.
Awesome, cool. What are some resources that coaches could go to? You mentioned one that I've started using quite a bit. The app TGFU, that's obviously a really good one. Do you have any others that you could direct people to?
Okay, so the TGFU, Teaching Games for Understanding app, has got a significant number of games on it and adaptations. You'll learn about those adaptations. I interestingly went into the Australian Sports, or Ausgov Sport website, and there was a section on Indigenous games.
Okay, great.
There's over 200 games you can download from the Australian sport website. Fantastic. And they're free games. You know, you have to sift through, and a few of them may not work or may not be ideal. But there was a really lovely game about learning to get to know people's names. And I sort of magpied that one, changed it a little bit. So those are a couple of resources. Also, some of the books you can buy. You know, a lot of the athletics books are quite good in terms of developing athletic skills. I have to be honest and say that I have watched other sports, watched the game, read the sort of looked at the app of TGFU, and done a lot of reflective practice. And the ideas that I've got really have come from just observing and watching different things. So I think if we engage in modern learning, contemporary learning, look at apps. The Australian Sport website was fantastic. New Zealand, the same one as well. They've got some very good children's games. And after all, the children's games are a basis not only for the young children, but can also be adapted for adults as well. The Human Noughts and Crosses, the Bangkok Traffic Jam, sounds like I'm talking in code
in
here.
Tongues.
Yeah, that's right. But they are very, really good ideas that have engaged all the way through. I'll tell you one thing. When a player gets that mid-season slump, in the UK, the slump is normally about the sort of Christmas period when they've come back from Christmas and it's dark and it's cold and it's wet, and they've either eaten too much or they may be mid-table or bottom of the table. You know, how are you going to re-engage them to get them to come back through those dark nights when the weather's bad and maybe things aren't going so well? It really is a challenge of a coach, but the rewards are phenomenal. Like I said, I'll never forget the player saying to me, "You just made that up, didn't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I did. I just made up." And he said, "Well, it was brilliant. I can remember who it was and what I was doing." I would say watch other sports, make a small change, be confident in that small change. Don't be afraid to ask other players for ideas. People can email me if I'm probably going to open a whole can of worms here by doing that.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to send some ideas. And books on creativity are very, you know, very good. I mean, the one I'm reading at the moment, which is called Originals by Adam Grant, which is called How Nonconformists Changed the World.
Okay.
Give you one little quote from it, which is just quite light, which reminds me of the good and the bad, I suppose. Creativity is allowing yourself to make mistakes. Art is knowing which ones to keep.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. Absolutely. And you know, that's come up a couple of times in this show, is that, you know, the art of coaching. It is an art. It's not paint by numbers. You have to be doing it for a long time to get that appreciation. And you know, you got to trial and error a whole bunch of stuff and make a whole lot of mistakes. And it's just like players too. Good players they're not good overnight. They have to do all those things as well. So. Last thing, we finished the show off on four closing questions. We all got into this game because we love it as a kid. Who's your favourite player when you were growing up running around that turned you on to rugby?
Peter Winterbottom. I'm afraid I think most of the answers to these questions are English players. I do apologise.
I was disappointed, Peter Winterbottom. But that's fine.
Yeah. So, well, I actually saw Christian Cullen, but he was growing up. So if you said to me, at any age, Christian Cullen for me was probably one of the most exciting players I've seen.
He was fantastic. Yeah, during that glorious time of the Wallabies from 99 to early 2000s. Every Wallaby was my favourite, and then he was one of my favourite All Blacks for sure. He was great. But Winterbottom, he was a back row, right?
He was a back row, and I think it's because he just, he was a hard player, but he was quiet, you know, and I was playing seven. I wanted to play seven, and he was, you know, a tough player and pretty uncompromising. And, I suppose, you know, a different era, but... If you said as a young child, who do I see that he was a player? And then again, Christian Cullen when I was a bit older.
Absolutely. So, great. And what about now? Who's some of the players you like watching run around?
Well, I was fortunate enough to sort of a few years ago work with Danny Kerr when he was in the age group under 19s. And okay. I think he's really coming through now as an exciting, dynamic, line-breaking nine.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, he contributed to the try against Italy with a little grubber kick through.
That was nice.
Yeah, he's one of the most exciting players. But then you'd have to look at Parise, you know, a fantastic back row player who, you know, I think the win loss record for Italy is sadly doesn't reflect.
Yeah. Well, I think it'd be even worse if Parise wasn't on the field.
Yeah, I was willing that drop goal over 2 weeks ago.
wasn't the finest strike, but I heard Keith Wood talking on Off the Ball on their podcast, and he was getting quite a ribbing from the other hosts about his four failed attempts of drop goals. So I think it's great.
Well, Zinzan Brook once did it against England in the 95 World Cup, just to rub salt into the wounds when we'd had Jonah Lomu running all over us. So
I support that decision. So that's good.
Absolutely.
okay, and what about coaches? Who's one of the high-profile coaches going around now that you like what they're doing?
So I have to say from the time at Saracens meeting, Joe Shaw and Alex Anderson.
Okay, yeah.
They kind of epitomise creativity, the fearlessness they understand about engagement and energy and trying different things and allowing players to lead different sessions. So they were the two coaches, and again, it's no coincidence just from the brief time I've spent there that why Saracens are one of the stronger teams. They definitely have plenty of ideas. They just think very differently, and there's lots of energy when you speak to them.
Yeah, no, they're on a good run right now, and they're one of my favourite English teams to watch for sure.
They got taken to the cleaners. They got taken to the cleaners on Sunday, so that's a bit of.
I missed that. Who was that against?
Oh, they're Wasps.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think that's as you say, it was a bad day at the office.
Yeah, and another strong English side as well. Okay, and what about a coach who's a bit more grassroots and who's chipping away at the coalface that you think deserves a mention and a shout out?
Okay, so I'm from a local team, so Winchester. There's a guy called Andy Fields who is widely regarded as one of the best up and coming coaches. I mean, I say up and coming, he's been coaching for a while now, but he's faced some challenges as a former player. And doesn't play now through injury, but when you speak to the players, the college students who've been taught by him, he's a great communicator, great thinker, and highly respected. And he's from my local area, I know Andy, and we don't talk often enough, but he was. One of the highly regarded coaches in this area, and he has a challenging story, but he just coaches, and the experience he passes on, the knowledge is highly prized by the players that he's worked with.
That's fantastic. It's really, really good to hear, and it's great when you hear about people who have had a tough go or whatever the situation was, and then still giving back to the game and still loving the game. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, just to finish off, if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Okay. So they're happy to email me at the University of Winchester, which is where I work. So you can see it on the website, which is richard.cheatham@winchester.ac.uk.
Yeah.
I also have a Twitter account, which is at Two Wheel Prof. So it's TWO and then Wheel PROF. And I post, like, I was really pleased to see the sock wrestling, and I'll post coaching ideas and links that I'll come across. So I really try and pass out as much information as I find and retweet things. So please contact me, for ideas, and have a look at the Twitter account for some of the things I post as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the ideas I'll have a year from now. the Bangkok traffic jam and the sock wrestling and the tug of war and the inside out, outside in, which is a great game. I can't describe it over the over the airwaves, but if you looked at my list of things, they're odd in words, but in actions they're very exciting. So a year from now, I'll have another list.
All right, great. That's fantastic. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show. I've enjoyed the chat. I've come away with a bunch of things, and I'm gonna try out the traffic jam. I might call it the Montreal traffic jam because we've got the same issues. But I learned a bunch, and thanks for giving up your time and coming onto the show.
Oh, no, it's been really great. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, no worries. All right, cheers, Richard.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at RugbyCoachSCNR or via the website at therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.